Welcome back to the Angry Admins Podcast for August 27th, 2007. This is episode 40.
Hey folks, it's that time again, time for the weekly Angry Admins Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Ryan Necessary.
And I'm Mr. Joe Bibby.
Also joining us today is our guest, Mr. Phil Strausser. Phil, we're glad to have you today. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do?
Well, I work here local in Houston with Joe and Ryan at a robotics lab. So I do embedded systems development and software development.
Okay, cool. Well, we'll be looking forward to your deeply intuitive insights into technology issues today.
That's right. And we'll look from the other side.
Right. We'll be grilling you for our feature story.
All right, great.
More on that later. But now, time for the news.
That's correct. First story comes to us from Ars Technica. They had a really interesting report on there about how home networking is still too complex for most users. And we can definitely attest to this situation as we had some wireless troubles.
Yeah, so this is why I need Joe and Ryan at work so much, because I'm the guy who could not connect to the wireless internet. It was crazy internet.
Yeah, but that was my fault because I'm the host, and if it's not set up easy for users, then I take part of the blame.
I don't know. How much more easy could it be set up?
That's right.
It was open. Anyway, but this is definitely true. I mean, you know, if you take the average person and you try to get them to share a file across their network, no, they're going to email it to themselves just to get it from one computer to another. And, you know, it shouldn't be that hard. It should be – there's got to be a way to still keep it secure but be able to connect to Wi-Fi, connect to wireless, connect to your landline. I mean, just whatever you want to connect to, it should be easy without losing security.
Right. Basically, the article ends up saying something about we're in the disillusionment phase where people just have the attitude of, oh, that stuff doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know, because, well, it kind of does, but you just have to be really on top of it to get it there. So.
And I think one of the things that makes it easier in the corporate world is the concept of a server kind of managing some of those things, which I think is what Microsoft is going for with the Windows Home Server. They talk about that a little bit in the article, too, and it has some potential. We'll see what happens when it finally rolls out and if people even buy it. But, you know, having some sort of centralized thing that manages your data and everything for you that you don't even have to touch once it's set up is really ideal.
Right.
So, but that's enough about that story. Ryan, you have something about somebody bought some cows or something?
Yeah, in the biggest cow purchase in history. So Acer Computers, you know them, you hate them. Maybe you love them, I don't know.
The epitome of the beige box.
I've never had one. Phil, are you an Acer user?
I'm not an Acer user, but a good friend of mine used to be long ago.
Okay, so I'll speak gently. I'll tread gently.
I think he hated that computer.
Okay, in the case, I won't. Anyway, Acer, regardless of what you think about them, has decided to buy Gateway. So Gateway computers, as they are right now, will continue in the new multi-branded Acer family, kind of like there's Toyotas and there's Scions.
Oh, so they're going to stay Gateway?
Right. So
just another badge.
Right. So they're saying they're going to keep the Gateway brand within their company.
I wonder if it's going to be the premium package from Acer. Because I would definitely consider it. I mean, even though Gateway had some shortfalls, but recently they've been making a nice comeback, and I would say they're better than an Acer to me.
Right. Well, as it was stacked up, Gateway was number 3 in the U.S., I mean, when you're behind such huge giants like HP and Dell and some of those, then, I mean, there just really wasn't much market share left for them.
Right.
Acer, supposedly, according to this article, is number 3 in the world. No one I know has an Acer, really, so they must be really popular overseas or something like that.
They're a decent low-end machine. I would definitely buy that over, like, say, an E-machine, but I would buy a package of poo to compute on over an E-machine.
The Poo Master 5000.
That's right. I mean, even a Zune, I would buy that over an Acer.
Ooh, I don't know about that.
Yeah, that's rough.
I don't know about that.
So the next story we have is something we've kind of touched on in the past, but this was on Slashdot this week, so I thought it'd be good to cover it. the concept of, you know, what is a sysadmin's unit of production? You know, the story came to us from someone who had a new, what was it, a new CFO or a new, what do they call them, the IT management overlord. basically his boss's boss probably or something like that.
Right.
Was trying to really figure out, you know, what metrics, in quotes, to use to understand how much people are getting done. And
sure.
This really just never works well in a sysadmin world because, you know, you're going from fighting fire to troubleshooting to, you know, trying to prevent fires, and you can't really rate, well, I spent an hour on this one little problem because it was hard to figure out, even though in the end it ended up being very simple.
Right.
You can't really gauge productivity, so it's pretty tough, I think.
Yeah, the other thing is you have, you know, managers who really don't know squat about mm-hmm. what you're really doing.
Exactly.
And then they brain fart something and they think you should be able to turn that around in 10 minutes.
Right.
Yeah.
So the idea is when you have lots of little things that you complete, mm-hmm. If you have a week when your status report is really thick and you're feeling good about yourself, mm-hmm. do like Ryan and kind of put those aside for a week when you worked on some really big problem.
Yeah.
And then kind of pull those back and say, hey, look what I did. These little items to kind of buff up.
Yeah.
Basically kind of stockpile for the lean times.
Mm-hmm. Some things. Well, and if they really don't have a clue, I mean, you could just throw some log files in your status report and yes. most people would be like, wow, look at all they got done. they issued out new IPs to everybody every 5 seconds. That was amazing.
Yeah, it sounds impressive.
So next story we have is going to be covered by Mr. Phil Strauser.
All right. Well, I guess this next story about is sort of about the new craze that's going on right now with these multi-core systems that are out there. Mm-hmm. You know, pretty much everyone thinks that the more CPU cores that you have out there, the better off you're going to be, which is, it's a little bit naive, and you kind of have to understand how software is written and how it actually executes within the machine to know that that's always not true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can almost say the same thing about CPU cycles versus two different architectures of computers. It's sort of the same thing. But I guess the bottom line is that if you have multi-cores, in order to really leverage all that extra horsepower, you actually have to write the code, mm-hmm. you know, and it has to you know, be compiled to run on multi-core systems.
You mean it won't just magically jump from one CPU to the other as load increases?
No, it does not do that.
What do you guys do all day?
I don't know. I listen to the Angry Admins podcast
oh,
all day.
Nice.
Generally.
Yes.
Good recovery.
So let me ask you this. So the last time I built a computer was probably, I guess this Christmas, it'll be 2 years ago. And I was faced with this question. And this was right when, like, the dual cores and mm-hmm. the crazy Core 2 Duo and all this stuff was coming out.
Right.
So I was deciding what to do and, you know, where to put my money. And I typically, my home computer, which is what this was for, was I kind of single task. Like,
right.
I'm either playing a game or right. I'm browsing or I'm syncing my iPod. I tend to not do a lot of things at the same time.
Right.
So I got a single core, like Intel 3.2 gigahertz, mm-hmm. which was not blazing cutting edge at the time, but kind of down below that. So do you think like a single core chip and a single chip was a good choice for what I was
yeah,
doing?
Yeah, for that. I think that's sort of, and sort of what this article talks about is what multi-core is good for is what's called multiple threads that are actually running different execution strings that don't really have anything to do with each other.
Right.
So what happens when you have, you know, your like your operating system, it runs multiple threads and it has to context switch between these different things.
Mm-hmm.
So what it's really doing is running this process for a couple, you know, of cycles and switching to a new one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you see a slowdown when you're running lots of apps at the same time. But yeah, if you're running just one app, it doesn't necessarily help you unless there is a very specialized piece of, you know, it's compiled to actually run mm-hmm. on a multi-core thing to sort of leverage that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the new game engines and things like that are definitely targeting the multi-core now. You know, I think people finally feel like it's reached its threshold of in the marketplace. So I think we're now starting to see things targeting it.
Right.
You know, like the new version of OS X, Leopard, you know, they're really bragging on, you know, how it can target all this RAM and can support multiple cores and take advantage of it. Even if the software isn't written for it, the OS will manage some of that on its own,
right.
swapping between apps, which is nice, but I mean, it's just like you're saying, you know, unless it's written for it,
right?
What's the point?
Yeah, gamers have always, you know, been able to bask in their their programmers really knowing the hardware intimately, right? And you know, figuring out how to squeeze every single cycle out of their TNT chip back in the day. Yeah,
the TNT. Oh man, that's going back.
Throwing it back.
Nice.
Well, a little bit of sad news. So, Sysadmins, your magazine is no more. Sysadmin Magazine, which is a magazine that I have seen on the shelf many times but bought rarely for whatever reason, they decided to shut their doors. Basically, it was a Slashdot post, and someone said, hey, I got a postcard saying that they're not going to print this anymore, and, you know, what can I do about it? And, you know, if they want to get, like, a CD of all the back issues or try to get a refund for the issues that aren't going to be coming. Now, I think it's uncertain whether SAMag.com, which is their website, is going to continue on. So, I mean, they may be just going to stay on in a digital format and then just not do the print issue anymore.
Yeah, I followed the link different times in the last day or two, and it's been up and down, so I don't know what the deal is with that, but it'd be nice if they at least kept something going.
Yeah, and the magazine overall was pretty good for sysadmins. I mean, they had some pretty deeply technical stuff and some IT industry news and just kind of topics like we talk about and some stuff maybe even a little heavier than a lot of the things that we cover. But I don't know. I think it's a good resource, but I'm not sure if they're going to be around in any form.
Well, it shows how tough it is for us, especially a super technical magazine, to stay and play in the current, you know, internet friendly infrastructure we've got going, where I can just look something up on Google and, you know, I can follow blogs who are as technical, if not even more so, than any magazine out there.
I think really what happened is that magazine was Sysadmin Magazine, and then with all the other IT magazines, it was just so underappreciated for its role. So
you're right.
If you want something to be underappreciated, just pretty much put a Sysadmin sticker on it.
And then no one will buy it or look at it.
No one will care about it.
In fact, they will turn away in horror.
Right.
And then ask why the server is down.
That's right.
Speaking of down servers.
Yeah, so just as everybody knew would happen eventually, the Windows Genuine Advantage servers just had a worldwide outage and caused all kinds of problems. If you're not familiar with Windows Genuine Advantage, say you only run Red Hat and you avoid Windows altogether, Windows Genuine Advantage is what lets your Windows box authenticate with the Microsoft servers when you're getting patches or when you... Even when you validate your install, and what it was doing is it was actually not only was it not letting people get updates, but it was telling people, oh, by the way, you have a pirated copy and it no longer works.
Oh wow!
So it was just obliterating some people. Now that was, I think, not as common, but there was just all kinds of stories online the last few days about this, about how, you know, this is exactly why DRM and things like this are just bad for customers all around.
You know what it is, right? After last week, when Skype blamed Windows for taking
Skype
down the server.
Skype went after the Genuine Advantage.
This is like the counterattack. That's what that was.
I bet you're right.
Skype's revenge.
It is.
Revenge of the Skype's or. Yeah, so, you know, I mean, everybody hates this, and yet Microsoft continues to go with it, and maybe it'll just push more people away from Windows and onto Linux and other things. That's all we can hope for.
That is all we can hope for. Well, on the lighter side, this past weekend was the Penny Arcade Expo, or PAX. And this has been around, I think this is the third year they've done it. If you're not familiar with the site penny-arcade.com, they're pretty good. They talk about a lot of gaming issues and sometimes stuff that's IT-related, but they're, it's a good time waster at work.
That's right.
Yeah.
If you need a daily little pick-me-up, check out
it's
their site.
It's got a good comic.
Yes, their comic is awesome.
Yeah.
But so they kind of organize or host this big expo when there's, you know, thousands of people there. It's every kind of gaming imaginable: board gaming, tabletop gaming, video gaming, pretty much everything is represented. It's open to the public. There's all kinds of lectures, panel discussions. They have live bands. This year, Wil Wheaton of Star Trek fame gave their keynote, which is, there's a link to that on the Penny Arcade site, actually. I listened to that today. And he gave actually a pretty good hour-long keynote talking about the history of video gaming and how he games with his kids, and all these politicians now are on this bandwagon saying that video games hurt people and they're innately antisocial and all this kind of stuff. So he had a lot of anecdotes and examples about why that's not true and how he plays games with his kids, and he's a responsible parent and he doesn't let his kids play.
He always surprises me because, you know, I mean, I remember watching him on Star Trek and I was like, man, that kid, I just hated him.
Yeah.
And then so he kind of has made a comeback in the last few years as a tech journalist, really.
Right.
And his blog, I guess, is pretty good. And then he's been on InDigital quite a bit on Revision 3. And mm-hmm. I mean, he knows his stuff and he goes hardcore into like left field with, you know, using Linux for doing everything imaginable.
I think MythTV.
Yeah, he's hardcore into MythTV or anything that uses Linux. He'll just try it out, and whether it's, mm-hmm. I mean, and he'll tell you how it is if it sucks or not.
Right. He's pretty well spoken. He does, like I say, he surprises you that you think, he's just some dumb TV guy.
But right. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah. But anyway, Penny Arcade Expo. It's every summer. Check it out. I'm actually thinking, based on the success this year, I maybe want to go next year.
Yeah. I mean, that was my one question is, why weren't we there?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Since we can't go to E3, we might as well go to this.
I know. I mean, this is always one. It's like everything you would want to know about. For the main story this week, we wanted to bring in Phil to discuss what we think is an important topic for sysadmins. This is kind of based loosely on an Ars Technica article that I saw a few weeks back. The title of that story was IT Staffs Challenged by Tech-Savvy Employees, the Consumerization of IT. And before we get into the interview with Phil, I wanted to kind of chat with you, Ryan, for a minute about what you think about this whole idea of the consumerization of IT. I know, at least from our side of things, it tends to bring good problems and not good problems, but it brings good with the bad. Mm-hmm. You know, users with more knowledge, they're going to have more advanced problems that are going to be harder to fix, which isn't necessarily a bad thing because, right. You know, it makes our jobs a little more secure because they still can't fix stuff.
Right.
But there's some bad things too, because they're going to bring stuff from home more often and ask us questions at work about home stuff. And I know we've kind of talked about that in the past and how we feel about that. And I think we pretty much said we hate it.
Right.
In general.
Right. Well, part of the article, too, we talked about the users, if they have, say, freeware, shareware, or hardware
right.
at home that they use that helps them be productive, and then they want to bring that into the
exactly.
workplace and expect you to support it.
That's right.
So
if they have any problems with it, you're still supposed to be the expert, even though they're the ones who wanted it and brought it in and used it.
Right.
The other thing I think that's interesting about this is just the fact that it makes it harder for us to kind of be the expert, I think. And so how do you feel about that in that, you know, maybe it doesn't make us feel quite as knowledgeable if they come in with a question that we don't know the answer to or have never addressed before?
Well, I'll tell you honestly that the quick version of the way I feel at work these days is, you know, we work with some very educated, talented people.
Definitely.
You know, people with PhDs, people that have been doing their field for many years, and guys that are just really going full speed in their lane, you know, so we generally don't have the users, although there are a few, that I can't work my email or how does this mouse work? You know, we don't have those type of users. Mm-hmm. You know, we have power users that have deep technical issues. And usually the problems are caused by they want their Windows workstation to do more than it was intended to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like I want to compile and I want my, you know, compile files to be written across the network, but I don't want to see this error. And, you know, it's just really kind of they're pushing the boundaries all the time. One thing that's strange, though, it's like I kind of expect most people to have like a router at home.
Yeah.
Like a wireless router or whatever, where they have like a cable modem or whatever. So you would think, okay, they aren't going to understand the basic concepts of a switch, cabling, a router, how it all works together. But it seems to be a lot of times that's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they just plugged it in and it worked.
So I think that's a really good point, because I think we have higher expectations for them.
Right.
You know, it's like they're calling us with a problem that would just take a reboot to fix. We're like, why haven't you fixed this yourself already?
Right.
Why are you calling me? You should have just fixed it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So that kind of sums up the kind of overall topic. I want to bring Phil into the discussion now, and I want to sort of break this into kind of two parts if we can. You know, we kind of do this all on the fly. We don't prep interviewees because I think it makes it more dynamic and more interesting to listen to. So But the idea here is I want to approach it like, so Phil as a user interacting with us, and then the other side of things as an advanced user, especially in your field, Phil, is that you become almost a sysadmin or an IT employee responding to your users.
Right, right.
So let's address the first part of things. As I mean, you're definitely a more advanced user than, you know, I mean, my history, I came from a small window and siding company. I've talked about it a few times in the past. And I mean, they had problems just checking email.
Right.
And then I come here where users are definitely know a lot more. Mm-hmm. And how do you feel from the side of asking for support? You know, does that make it more difficult for you because you understand more of what's going on? Or
well, I sometimes I do feel like the idiot who doesn't know how to make his mouse work. Because,
right.
you know, working in a very technical field, you feel like you should kind of understand, you know, mm-hmm. just commercial off-the-shelf technology. But, I mean, knowledge is knowledge, whether or not, you know, you're talking about a home router or you're talking about motor control system. You know, it's sort of the same thing. I mean, people have their expertise in certain things and other people have their mm-hmm. expertise in other things. So it's real important to almost have that like knowledge sharing with the local IT guy. And I know for us, it has been a huge asset to have, you know, dedicated people in our lab to mm-hmm. kind of that sort of like real quick turnaround, quick response can kind of handle all the quirky stuff that we come up with, just to have that real quick turnaround.
And there is the danger here for, I think, on our side of things, Ryan, where, you know, maybe we'll get a little jaded in that we feel like they are so much smarter and that they kind of maybe look down on us. And there's the danger there of kind of becoming the, what was it, Saturday Night Live, the company's computer guy, where the guy's like, well, that's so hard, blah, 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 you know.
Right.
Well, I know for my part, working with very smart users, a lot of times I don't really feel like I'm the only guy that could fix this problem.
Right.
It has to be me. Basically, I'm the guy that is slotted or being paid to have the time to research this mm-hmm. problem,
right.
you know, and get the fix. It's not that any of the users couldn't go to Google and hit the tech boards and do the things that I do.
Right.
Having background, it's like, well, I've been doing sysadmin for 10 years, so mm-hmm. there is some knowledge
sure.
there to help me with
something.
Yeah,
definitely.
But I think a lot of times, I mean, I work with users that, you know, they could fix it as easily as I could, but that's not their job. It's
right.
my job
right.
to figure it out. So,
I mean, how do you feel about that, Phil? Hearing that side of things as the user, do you feel that way, or is it?
I definitely have my, you know, RTFM, you know,
right.
moments myself, where if it, you know, I definitely could spend a little bit of extra time and
mm-hmm.
you know, figure it out myself. And I've even asked you, I know of particular instances I've
yeah.
asked you guys questions, and right as it exits my mouth, I'm like, ooh, I could have figured that
mm-hmm.
out. But I guess it does have to go into like a time resource
Definitely.
Management sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's very few things that, you know, say in my little subsection of software and embedded design kind of stuff, any one of us could do any one of the tasks, but, you know, we're just kind of assigned
mm-hmm.
to do whatever it is we're doing. And, you know, we need to become an expert in that in order to kind of help the team at large.
Specialize.
Yeah.
Right. And specialize.
Definitely.
And,
Definitely.
You know, as a group, I think everyone wins in that way.
Sure.
What I do try to do is, and I don't know how much other people do this, but try to learn as much about the stuff so I don't have to come and ask the
mm-hmm.
next time.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah, I think that's a good point that I didn't even think about until you just said it, is that, you know, in the past, I'll have to show somebody the same thing 6 or 7 times before they finally get it. Whereas in these labs, I mean, we show you guys once, generally you've got it, and you
right.
will never ask us about that
yeah,
again.
Yeah, unless something behind the scenes change
sure.
and we can't use the same trick again.
Right, but I mean, that's something I think we're kind of spoiled, Ryan, in that having such advanced users, they are smart enough to get the fix, and it's not just this magical
mm-hmm.
thing that, you know, sends me these messages every day.
But the downside of that, though, is when the request hits your email inbox, or
mm-hmm.
when you check your voicemail, or when the guy walks up to you, it's not going to be, how do I check my email? It's going to be something like,
yeah.
I'm having this intermittent router issue with, you know, UDP traffic, and so, and it's whatever they give you, if it's a smart user, it's going to be nasty. Yeah. It's going to be hard. It's going to take a while to fix.
Right.
And that makes it tough on our side of things, I would say, especially related to the story this week about, you know, how do you classify your time in IT,
right,
especially if the problems take a week or two to research,
right,
to find a solution to. That research, most people are going to look at that as wasted time. I mean,
right,
why don't you already know it, or why don't you have the book that tells you how to do it? And because we're so specialized here, I think it does cause some issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's definitely, it's two different ways of, you know, attacking the problem of IT. You know, someone who handles a very large, I'd say less power-based users,
mm-hmm,
you know, on a larger scale than what you guys do, rather than, you know, sort of a in the trenches but real intense kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're two completely different ball games.
Yeah, definitely.
Two sets of knowledge.
So I know in the past there's been other people coming through, and I don't remember off the top of my head how long you've been there, Phil, but did you have any experience with any of the previous sysadmins that have been around?
I have. And I could say that I think that our lab has definitely been spoiled by having very good, quick, prompt, and even friendly service,
mm-hmm,
by you guys. So there's a lot of people out there who wind up being sysadmins that are not cut out to kind of handle the sort,
mm-hmm,
of rigors, and you know they don't know how to set up to only open certain ports,
right,
on the router for particular types of traffic, because,
mm-hmm,
they just don't even know how to do,
yeah,
it.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they did know, they probably wouldn't. They would just tell you how they couldn't.
I think that's very true, and there's the danger there of, you know, someone getting so jaded that they stop giving the support that they're supposed to, and that it's, you know, they're just not even doing their job anymore, and they're forgetting that IT is a support role, and that, you know, we're here to really kind of make you guys be able to do your job well and provide services that assist you in that goal. But you also have to do that same kind of thing, in,
right,
that, you know,
yeah,
you as the software guy kind of provide services to, you know, not only your own department but to the mechanical side of things, or,
sure, yeah.
And so I'm curious to see how, as an advanced user, do you feel a little bit like a sysadmin at times, where you kind of get blamed for all the problems even though it's not your fault?
Yeah, software is classically always blamed for,
right,
the world's problems, especially with a bunch of extremely intelligent, self-motivated,
yeah,
mechanical engineers. But
I think the order of blame goes network, software, hardware.
Right, yeah. Hardware is always blamed last because their design has to be right.
Right.
Time, right.
But the actual source is usually hardware, software, network.
Right, right. Unless,
according to us.
Yeah. Right. Well, I've found that anytime I write code, the blame goes software. But, you know. All right. So, yeah, in engineering, I mean, we're all going to have all these different applications which aren't going to be in this sort of standard IT toolkit that you're going to see in the office environment. And generally what happens is that the people who are using the software become the experts in it,
mm-hmm,
so that anytime anyone needs some support, they actually have to ask those people for support.
Mm-hmm.
And with what I do, I write a lot of the software to help test out some of the underlying robotics technologies. So even for people to run their test beds and even test their mechanical hardware, you know, they need to come to me and ask me how to run the system. So it's very, very much a support role. You know, I'm there to add features for them rather than, you know, the other way around. So.
And I think that brings up another complication, I mean, for sysadmins, us in specific, because once you guys run into problems with that where you can no longer figure out how to fix it, then it does come to us and we're like, I've never seen this before.
Right.
And you guys have been using it for 2 years? Hello?
Right.
Yeah, it was like you come up like, hey, you know, we were having a problem with the thing and then the yada yada. We're like, I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's happened,
yeah,
several times.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's really funny too, because the same thing happens where, you know, you get a phone call from you know, John Q, boss man, who says, well, you know, I think the server's down. You know, we get the same kind,
yeah,
of thing. You know, it's,
yeah,
like, well, the widget executors not widgeting.
Yeah.
You know, they're really vague and they don't know what they're talking about. It's it's fun for me to laugh at them, too.
Yes,
so.
Yes.
Well, I know one thing I'm guilty of, and I'm really not ashamed of it at all, is, you know, so the process where we work, it's kind of like the layers of an onion.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I acknowledge that a big chunk of those layers are mine, but once you peel it off enough layers, then at some point I'm going to be like, Phil, I'm sorry, but that's on your side of the fence.
Right.
You're going to have to deal with that.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's appropriate too, because I mean, there's only a certain amount of knowledge that can be retained by any one onion. So, I guess.
Right. Yeah. Well, and it's true in that, you know, if we just let you guys throw it to us every time, then it won't ever get fixed, and we'll get blamed. And I mean, it's good to have that balance. And I do appreciate when we do throw it back to them, you know, they're like, oh, okay. You know,
right.
Not every time, but
like, yeah. We have no advice.
Go away.
Right. Yeah. That give and take and learning on both sides of the fence is what I've really liked having, you know, good sysadmins around the lab for. So.
Yeah. Well, I think it's another.
We did not pay this individual to say these things.
Right. Well, the nice thing too is that, you know, basically whenever something like that does happen and you have some power users come into your sysadmins, then it's a chance for both sides to not only finally dialogue, because sometimes long periods of time go by where you don't dialogue with your power user, so you don't know exactly what are you working on and what is this for and what does that do, so it's a chance for you to like come up against that boundary of like you move towards their side of the fence, they move towards your side of the fence, and then like, well, let me show you everything that I know that makes me think my side of it's fine. And then they do the same thing. And usually somewhere in that process, one or both of you sees that, oh, well, we could tweak this and, oh, here it is. And, you know, so usually it's somewhere in the middle. Yeah.
They generally find out it was Phil's software's fault. And
I doubt it.
Everyone's happy.
So I want to just kind of wrap up this little segment here. Back to the advanced user, and you're kind of as the IT guy for your department and that kind of thing. Do you find that, you know, you're seeing the same problems from them that, you know, you would send to us? And are there times where maybe they come to you and you pass them on to us? And, you know.
Yeah, I guess sometimes. Generally, you know, when it doesn't work the first time, yeah, I just want to switch out the router or whatever.
Right.
Or say, hey, Joe, you know, what's going on? And then you tell me, no, Phil, you need to turn on that piece of hardware over there. And that does happen. Yeah. But.
Okay. Well, I think this has been good. I mean, you know, it's definitely, this is going to all filter down to everybody eventually. You know, the kids growing up now are doing things that, you know, I didn't do till I was in college. And, you know, we're going to see more and more of the, quote, consumerization of IT in that. You know, they're going to bring in their consumer concepts and try to apply those to the corporate world. And I think that's another critical thing we need to think about. And, you know, using things that are designed for home users and trying to bring those into business. It's one thing I noticed when I first came on is the use of things that are just kind of, you know, COTS equipment. They call it consumer off the shelf, where maybe a more advanced business hardware that costs a little bit more but's more reliable will come into play. And it's important, I think, to keep that balance of, you know, just knowledge versus what's really the best thing here.
Right.
Right. Thanks a lot, everybody, for sticking with us through another agonizing episode of Angry Admin. We were really happy to have Mr. Phil Strauser with us today for your inputs and your insights. So hopefully it wasn't too horrible.
No, man. Trying to get him on for, 3 weeks now? Yeah. He's getting sick.
I ran out of excuses. So,
yeah.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Right. Like a true sysadmin, eventually you will run out of excuses. But for everyone else, feel free to check out the show notes for all the good stuff we talked about this week. We'll have links out there. Our forums are still out there. And if you want to email us, you can email us at feedback@angryadmins.com.
Please visit the forums. They're lonely.
No, don't even visit the forums now. This is reverse psychology.
That's right. Don't go there.
Under no circumstances.
And do not email us at feedback@angryadmins.com. That's feedback@angryadmins.com. And angryadmins.com/forum.
So anyway, now that we've verbally spammed you, we will wrap it up. Until next week, I'm Ryan Necessary.
And I'm Joe Bibby. And our special guest this week was
Phil Strasser.
Straight ballin'! Straight ballin'!
For it.
And then... Straight ball in!